Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go! Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 293, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. Of course, follow us at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. Of course, I am here today, this evening, with one former WWE writer and just podcast extraordinaire. He's so good at podcasting. He has his own network, ladies and gentlemen, the MLW Network. He also does some shows, some wrestling shows. He's got a big launch coming up, or I think it just passed, or it's in the works in Orlando. He'll let you know a little bit more about that in clear detail. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring on the show tonight, Court Bauer. How are you tonight, sir?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. So let the listeners know just about your launch. You got some MLW. It's you have a launch as far as just promotions coming on. You got some Orlando dates coming up. Let the listeners know about that.
Sure. Major League Wrestling is the company that started in 2002, and we had guys like CM Punk, Terry Funk, Raven, Satoshi Kojima from New Japan Wrestling, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and just a litany of really talented guys over a 2 or 3 year period. And then I hit the pause button, went to work for WWE. I was a member of their creative team from 2005 to 2007. Then moved over for a bit into the world of MMA, producer working on shoulder programming for Showtime's, at the time, Strikeforce product, which was a fairly successful run they had, and then moved over to do some consulting for Sinclair Broadcasting's Ring of Honor, then moved on to work a little bit with AAA, Lucha Libre in Mexico, and also Lucha Underground, where I served as a consultant, before relaunching MLW this past year. And during that period, around 2011, we started a podcast with Mr. St. Laurent, myself, and then brought in guys like Conan, Jim Cornette, and the list went on and on over the years to include a variety of people, including Carl Anderson and Gallows from the club in WWE. We have had shows from Steve Corino. We've had shows including J.J. Dillon, who's on the air with us now, Bruce Pritchard, Something to Wrestle With, which is a huge hit for us.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Schiavone returned to wrestling to do his Monday show called What Happened When. And the list goes on and on. We have something for everyone. MVP has a show. The Brussels Rap Crew have a show. So we offer something for everyone on our menu of podcasting. And we even have a premium model where you can subscribe to get extra content from some of our guys for just $1.99. So the world of MLW never stops, it seems. And now we've re-entered pro wrestling. We had our first event in October in Orlando at Gilt Nightclub, which had Wale co-exec producing with myself. And we're gearing up for our next event, Never Say Never, on December 7th in Orlando. So we're looking forward to that event. And we just announced the double main event, which will be John Morrison teaming with Shane Strickland against Darby Allin, up-and-coming guy that's a little bit of CM Punk blended in with Jeff Hardy and Raven. He's a really fascinating character.
Nice.
Along with Jimmy Havoc, who is England's most dangerous man, the king of the death matches, and they'll be in a no DQ match, the four of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also have, as real as it gets, a UFC strong style kind of collision with Matt Riddle, who left the UFC on a 4-win streak, against Filthy Tom Lawler. So you have two radically different types of matches doubleheading our big show in December with Tony Schiavone and the former Rich Bocchini, in the broadcast booth. So it's a really cool product that we're putting out there. I hope people check it out. You can learn more at MLW.com, but it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Speaking of Wale, you put together Wale Mania every year, which happens during WrestleMania weekend, and I was fortunate enough to attend this year in Orlando. I was there doing some coverage. So it was really interesting. I had JR on the panel, Dave Meltzer on the panel.
Yeah.
It was a really, really cool time. So let the listeners know. I'm sure a lot of people know, but you got some announcements that you just broke recently about New Orleans, right?
Yes. We'll be bringing back Wale Mania for possibly our last year in 2018, and that will be at the Republic NOLA. In the Warehouse District, and that'll be on Thursday night. We've the last 3 years sold out, and I suspect we're going to sell out again this year as we kick off WrestleMania weekend on Thursday night, April 5th. And you get tickets now for it at mlwtickets.com and Ticketfly. And every year it gets bigger and bigger. Last year we had a big podcast panel with Jim Ross on it, Eric Bischoff, some Bullet Club guys, Bruce Pritchard, MVP, Will Ospreay, Ricochet, just a real big eclectic mix of guys, and of course Wale and Dave Meltzer and some of the MLW radio personalities as well. And then we had we kicked into real high gear with the after party, Wale performing, Enzo Amore in the DJ booth with Chris Hero, aka Cassius Ohno.
Mm-hmm.
Rey Mysterio on Chad Gaspard's shoulders in the DJ booth. Mega Ran from the hip hop world. A New Day was there in the DJ booth. It was a who's who. Then on stage, you had Samoa Joe. You had Lana. You had Moose. You had, I always call him Uha, but he's Apollo.
Apollo Crews, yeah.
In WWE. He actually was jumping up and down and fell off the stage.
Oh.
And the night. It was one of those wild nights, and it's kind of like our version maybe of Studio 54, where you have such an eclectic mix of people, interesting people from all walks of life come together, and for one night out of the year, they all party and have a really good time. And you have a podcast, you get some of the guys talking shop, and then you get some of the partying you heard about probably reading wrestling books or on podcasts, and hear all those wild stories about the business, and you get to see that up close and personal and be a part of it one night a year with Wale Mania. So it's a real fun experience where we take the hip hop and pro wrestling cultures and just smash them together.
Absolutely. And you have any panelists scheduled for New Orleans?
We're not going to probably announce that for a little bit. We have usually a meet and greet, and the first year it was Rey Mysterio. The second year it was four members of the Lucha Underground show, and that show was really on fire,
nice.
And a lot of people were interested in it. And then last year was New Japan, which was, again, another hot company. that gave us four of their top guys. So we're really excited about that, and now we have to figure out a way to top that. It gets harder and harder.
Yeah.
We have Rey Mysterio coming off of his WWE contract, coming in and talking for the first time, breaking his silence, and then we go year two, and we have like Alberto and all those guys coming out, Pentagon Jr. and all those dudes. Every year it's a different thing, but we try to give the fans something fun, something that's unique, something that you wouldn't typically get. And we have to make it a different type of experience. There's so much and so much going on at WrestleMania weekend. So how do you differentiate? And that's the challenge that we always face.
Yeah.
is trying to be different and giving the fans something that's going to make them say, wow, that was exciting. It was worth, you know, the $15 for a GA ticket, or if they want like a golden ticket, you know, $150. And
yeah.
then there's a bunch of price ranges in between. In fact, we just, as we're recording this, we just put tickets on sale for Wally Mania, and the golden tickets sold out in under a minute. And then we added more golden tickets, and they're just about sold out too. So I'm blown away to see this thing mature into what it has.
Yeah.
But also part of me thinks, you know, at a certain point, you also have to realize, okay, now you got to move on and do something totally different and maybe blow it up and look at different concepts. So you're continually pushing things in a different direction, because at a certain point, yeah, it's the craziest party, but then you got to say, well, how do you escalate things and do it differently?
That's right.
So that's my challenge for 2018 and to 2019.
Perhaps you can throw a ring in there and put some matches together.
The only challenge with that is, honestly, we go to these nightclubs that are really like trendy nightclubs, and they just don't have the space for a ring. We actually did try to put a ring into Cheer nightclub last year in Orlando, and we put it in. We did like a dress rehearsal, like half a year in advance, and it didn't look right. And I thought, listen, if we can't do this right for the fans, then I'm not going to do it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever actually publicly talked about this, so you have an exclusive here.
Mm.
But I just felt, listen, if the fan experience isn't good, then I don't want to disappoint the fans, and they pay their hard-earned money to see something. The ring is crowded. The wrestlers can't really perform at an optimal level.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. And the nightclub's like, in New Orleans, this was the host club for the NBA All-Star Game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really beautiful club. In fact, what we do in our MLW wrestling shows, we do them at nightclubs because I want that consistent atmosphere. We do it. MLW does things a little differently. You know, we could go to an armory, but I like keeping the atmosphere, keeping it trendy. And so we have these great relationships with these clubs. So that's a big part of why we do what we do. So the club we use down in Orlando, which is Gilt Nightclub, they just put up about $1.5 million into the club.
Wow.
and it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
So we just have to keep that kind of atmosphere consistent. And so that's, if we can get a ring in there, I would love to do it. Just so far, it's just been a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Shotgun Saturday night type of feel. we shall see if that,
That was the first time when I was in high school, they were doing Shotgun Saturday night, and I was like in ninth grade. And I went into New York City to see one of the shows at the All-Star Cafe. And I just wanted to see the show. We couldn't even get it on TV in New York, which was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to check it out. And we go there, and it's really like, I'm like, wow, this is wild. Like, there's no barricades. There's no typical environment for a WWE show. And I happen to go use the bathroom, and I see Honky Tonk Man leaving the bathroom. I go in the bathroom. It's Vince McMahon.
Wow.
And I went, this is surreal. So I'm like, well, I want to meet this guy. I want to be in wrestling, and this, I don't know how to network, but this is a weird moment.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I take the quickest bathroom break you can take, and then kind of stalked him on the way out, and then introduced myself. And he, of course, was running a live show or about to. So I said, yeah, nice to meet you, and moved on. Little did I know that in under 5-6 years, I'd be actually working for him, and he'd be my boss.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of working for Vince McMahon, we've got a few minutes here, and we're going to talk about some So some Survivor Series. Of course, there's been a bunch of audibles called throughout the past few weeks. There's been some viral illnesses going around. It's really just kind of turned TLC upside down for the better, many believe. And then, of course, we got Survivor Series coming up, and you know, some audibles being called there as well. You worked for the WWE for a few years with the writing staff, and of course, you experienced some audibles that were being called. Recall some times that you remember kind of flipping the pay per view upside down and just kind of really scurrying and trying to figure out how to make this as you know marketable or even better than what was originally planned.
Well, that's always the challenge when you find yourself in a situation like WWE's had over the last month. You don't anticipate these kind of things happening, but because you've installed good wellness policy and real meds where you have to do these tests, you prevent a lot of problems. I mean, I know for a fact WWE's wellness prevented MVP from having a severe heart issue, and they probably saved his life from it because of it. So that's pretty impressive how that's really how the business has evolved, and WWE's done so much to be proactive now with it in recent years, and you can see it's really been a positive for many people and altered their lives for the better. When I was there, we had the Great American Bash 2006. Originally, we had in the main event a Punjabi prison match, which was Great Khali's specialty match at the time. That's a whole side story unto itself, the concept behind it. But he was to take on The Undertaker. We had Bobby Lashley in a big match, and he also, I was pulled from the show, so he had Khali, Bobby Lashley, Super Crazy, and a few other guys were pulled. They basically were red flagged for false positives on elevated enzymes, so liver issues, that all turned out to be false. We didn't know that for weeks. But those guys were on the DL indefinitely as a result. We had already taken care of TV and everything, and we were in our final stretch going into the pay-per-view that weekend. So it was a really challenging situation. We did have social media really at that point was MySpace, and WWE really wasn't wired to it. So you had to get your message out to the site, and that was decent. But just the creative was so hard. You just basically are trying to live up to that obligation of we were going to give you a Punjabi prison match, and it was against the Giant. So instead, we got Big Show. And the match, you know, was a difficult match because it wasn't built properly. You had a cage that was really not the design of what it should have been. Originally, that match was supposed to be a death match, an exploding FMW, IWA Japan style death match. But by the time it went from us to production at WWE and they take care of those kind of elements, when we got the final concept days before the event, we were baffled to see it be basically bamboo and look like something out of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom instead of something that was going to be a lot different. So you just never know with these kind of things. And so we had a lot of challenges with that show. And at the time, that's when I first probably started hearing about the rumor of there being a Great American Bash curse, and that ever since WWE inherited the event, there had been issues every year. I don't know if that's true or not, but
we'll see.
For its money in terms of the worst Great American Bash. I mean, 1991 was pretty funky with the scaffold match where no one wanted to be on it, and you had the whole weirdness with Ric Flair walking out, and then you had to decide a champ between Luger and Wyndham. But this one's probably infinitely worse. That might make 91 look like an all-time great compared to the challenges we had in 2006. So that was a challenge, and you just tried to do your best to, as the saying goes, turn lemons into lemonade. And sometimes you're going to come up short because you just don't have better options, or you might be able to, hey, what if we were just to bring in someone that's on the outside and sign them to something and get them to come out and make a big splash. But the boss says, nope, we got to stick to our roster. We got to stick to our budget. We can't do that. So there are limitations, and sometimes Vince will waive those limitations and allow you to go into another sandbox and pull some of the toys. He did that with Kurt Angle. I thought that, you know, there's two ways to look at it. They might have robbed Kurt of a real great comeback. Can't replicate when he first comes back into WWE and building around that. But they had to find a solution for that match. I would have probably gone with Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, me too.
I think using one of your Brock Lesnar cards in that match, he's a mercenary. It's easy to get you into that frame of mind. I thought it would have been a compelling get. And he would have been able to be physical in that match. And I think he's more valued there than on a house show if you had X amount of house show matches left on his contract. So it's also different because you're in a vacuum when you're in that creative environment. On the horn for 5-6 hours trying to figure out a solution, and all of a sudden everyone's convinced themselves Kurt Angle's the guy, and here's why. And it's hard because you can't, you know, you play Monday morning quarterback on the creative team, but in that moment, when you're in that environment for hours and feel like you're a jurist trying to decide the fate of someone in a criminal case, all of a sudden you have 12 people that are on the same page because they just want to get a verdict done. And so it's kind of a war of attrition sometimes.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, and so, you know, we got Survivor Series coming up and shortly here, and we got some Angle coming back for another match. Again, kind of diluting that big match feel for, you know, reportedly Mania. But, you know, I think the positive is both of those matches weren't singles matches, so you can still build for, you know, the big singles match, the big, you know, when he comes out in the singlet and things like that. I think the Shield gear helped him. I think it was, I think it protected him from still having that aura of a real singles return. But he will be at Survivor Series. And just your overall thoughts on the, just the Survivor Series card. Roman Reigns was talked about being a fifth member. Now it seems like we'll get the Shield versus the New Day. You know, I think personally, I think one of the biggest criticisms I have right now is just I'm a traditionalist. I'm a big fan of the face heel dynamic, and you have the mid card champions both heels. You have the women's champions both heels. Babyface versus babyface is good if it's built up properly, but you're not going to have much of a strong build to do the Shield versus the New Day. You know, which are, you know, two incredibly huge babyface trios on each brand. So, your overall thoughts on just what Survivor Series is looking like right now?
Well, it's looking a little funky. They're hot-shotting a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
they've done that over the last month or two. Really, if you look at even before TLC, what they're doing with the Shield reunion, you could argue is hot-shotting the product. But that is an indication to me that they have quite possibly something very compelling for WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Product like they're doing right at this moment. What does that tell you that they possibly may have on the horizon for WrestleMania? Maybe we have Ronda Rousey. Maybe we have Conor McGregor. What do we have for WrestleMania? That's the question I have right now. Is if you're building this up, if you're heating things up to the extent you are, what do you have up your sleeve for later? Because you wouldn't be doing this if you needed this for later on.
Right.
And so that's going to be a real interesting thing to see is what's the road to WrestleMania going to look like? Is this Brock Lesnar send-off? He's in his contract year. He should be finishing up unless something changes in March. Or, I'm sorry, April. Mm-hmm. April 8th or 9th, something like that. So where does he end up? And what's the future of Paul Heyman if, in fact, this is the end for Brock Lesnar in WWE?
Mm-hmm.
If it is, he has to sit out a serious amount of time for suspension for his last go-round in the UFC against Mark Hunt. So there's just so many interesting variables here.
Yeah.
There really are. I don't know what the future is going to be for Survivor Series or the road to WrestleMania, but it's going to be looking a little it's going to look a little different than I think we all anticipate. And I just don't know if it's going to include Ronda or any of these things.
Yeah, certainly. It's been a pleasure, Court. Let the listeners know once again where to find you on social media.
For sure. You can find us on social media at MLW and Facebook.com/Major League Wrestling and Instagram.com/Major League Wrestling. And I'm on Twitter at Court Bauer, CourtBauer, just like Jack Bauer. And I'm also on Instagram at Court Bauer as well. And you can learn more about MLW at MLW.com or go to our podcast network, MLW Radio Network, at MLWRadio.com.
That all means that Court Bauer is a very busy guy, and he's loving what he's doing, and he doesn't get much sleep. That's what I just heard.
Yeah, pretty much. The world of MLW never stops, and apparently neither does my world. So it's a good thing to be busy. I can't say how lucky I am to be doing what I'm doing, and my job is just to try to give you guys the best I can, and so hopefully I deliver on that.
Awesome. Thanks for taking your time to speak with us tonight, Court.
Hey, my pleasure. Take care, Chris.
You too. Bye-bye. Thank you, Court Bauer, for being on the show tonight, episode 293 once again. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. We got so much to talk about tonight. Of course, I am Chris Featherstone, and follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and support the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling. We got some live comments coming up here. Of course, hashtag PanSlams, PanSlams, PanSlams. If you want to be a part of the Twitter conversation, or just go to at Crave Wrestling and tweet away. Ladies and gentlemen, we got the one of my favorite co-hosts, one of my favorite guest co-hosts of Pancakes and Power Slam show history. He's been on the show as a guest co-host for a lot of times, and most likely a lot more. And we just have a good time and a good chat every single time he gets on the show. So we got so much to talk about, so let's bring him right on. Without further ado, feature columnist from Bleacher Report, the Dr. Chris Mueller. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, Chris. Thanks for having me on again.
My pleasure, my pleasure. We got so much to talk about. We got some interesting developments from tonight, so lots and lots and lots of good, interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it was a very eventful evening, especially in that main event, man. I know they spoiled it earlier in the day, but it didn't make watching it any less fun for me personally.
I agree. Totally, I agree with that. All right, further, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the first headline. Wow, wow, wow. What a weekend, ladies and gentlemen. It all started in the beginning of the week when it was like, is this really real? Yes, it is really real. It happened, power struggle over the weekend. Kenny Omega defeated Beretta for the WGP U.S. Championship. Cuts a promo, a typical Bullet Club promo. Button on the jumbo screen. The lights go out. The countdown comes on the jumbo screen. And all of a sudden, Chris Jericho's face pops up. Cuts a promo. Kenny Omega rips his picture off and challenges Jericho challenges Omega to a match at Wrestle Kingdom. Wow, wow, wow. Of course, it was accepted. We are going to have, for the first time, this is the first time Jericho's competed outside of the WWE in 18 years. I mean, this is the WWE lifer I won't compete outside the WWE ever in my life, Just such a loyal person in WWE. But, you know, Jericho's always an advocate of just independent wrestlers and just people who are really scratched away. Of course, when he, you know, the past couple of returns that Jericho had, he, you know, he worked with Luke Harper, he worked with Finn Balor, he worked with Kevin Owens, he worked with Neville, you know, four people who were in the indies for years before they went into the WWE. So he's worked with a lot of people who, before they went to WWE, clawed and scratched away to that place. So obviously there's an appreciation that he had for that. Of course, there was, you know, times that, you know, he, over the past few weeks, he was talking, you know, and he was feuding with Kenny Omega. People thought, you know, how far is this going to go? Because Jericho's a WWE guy. And of course it was a shock to many, a shock to most, that Jericho was almost 20 years stepping out of the WWE, competing against Kenny Omega in about 7 weeks.
Yeah, it definitely caught me off guard, but it's an awesome thing for New Japan and Kenny Omega and all that. But after I started thinking about it, it almost seemed like very convenient timing, because Jericho's been plugging this wrestling cruise that he's been putting together. And I could just see it playing out where he beats Omega for the title, makes a bunch of headlines, gets a ton of publicity, and then announces a rematch on his cruise, drafts the title back, fills up the ship with people wanting to see that rematch. If that's what he's going for, it might be the most brilliant marketing strategy a wrestler or a wrestling company has used in a long time.
He thought for 10 months, though?
I don't know. I mean, it all depends on what his plans are with WWE as to how long he would hold the title. But you know how New Japan is. They have so many belts right now that Jericho could maybe hold it, work a couple of times defending it before dropping it back. I don't know. But it just seems like the timing is real convenient, and we know he's going to have Bullet Club and ROH and some New Japan guys on that cruise. So it just makes sense that he would probably end up working a match or two while he's there anyway.
I think that would be a very brilliant marketing strategy if he would, you know, capture the belt at Wrestle Kingdom. The only thing is, like I said, that's about a 10-month gap, you know, between Wrestle Kingdom and the cruise. I just don't see Jericho typically doesn't hold belts very long. And, you know, he's, you know, a lot of people will credit Jericho. He's one of my favorites of all time. But Jericho is one of the king. I mean, people always say this to Edge, about Edge, but Jericho is definitely one of those transitional champs. And as we saw with a lot of his WWE championships, the 07-08 one was, it was less transitional because he was, you know, really one of the top heels in WWE. But the other, you know, five reigns that he had were quite transitional. However, you know, like you said, I mean, there are a lot of belts in IWGP. Well, in New Japan, you know, you have the World, you have the Junior Heavyweight, which, you know, Kenny Omega also had. You have the Never Open Weight Championship. You know, you have, of course, the Intercontinental Championship, and, of course, the Heavyweight. So you have a six-man tag team. There's quite a bit of titles in New Japan. So, you know, it didn't necessarily require. And plus, you know, New Japan, they have events. They don't have events like every single time, you know, like every single month, like, and
right.
Those articles, like, pay-per-views, you know, coming on. They have events It helped them, but also part. You know, Dominion, Power Struggle, Wrestle Kingdom. Of course, the event right after Wrestle Kingdom. So, you know, with Gerald taking a stint, you know, with Fozzie and defending, but.
Chris, are you there?
So,
sorry, you're cutting out real bad, man.
He was down. I don't know if you can hear me now.
A little bit. You're cutting in and out real bad.
Okay. Hopefully it all works out here a little bit better soon.
There, you just
later.
Started coming in clear again.
Good. He was on Killing the Town recently. And he was talking about how just the original intent was to he talked to Triple H, he talked to WWE about acquiring NXT talent, and that was his first, you know, kind of order of business, because he, like I said, he's been a very loyal WWE guy, and you know, it's just how he's been, you know, the past 18 years. And he got rejected. He got rejected by, you know, he asked Triple H. He said he waited about 3 months just to have, for them to have a 35-minute conversation to him, just to try to, you know, kind of cut corners to get to the point of they're going to reject his offer. So he went and he asked, you know, then he reached out to the ROH talent. So, you know, he did his due diligence, he says. He says WWE does not play well, and he did his due diligence before going to, you know, ROH talent. He said he told Triple H that he's still going to do it. I respect him for that. He stayed loyal to WWE and then acquired ROH talent when he said, you know, was told that he wasn't going to do it. And so, you know, you really can't knock him for that. And I don't think there's really anyone he's not under contract with WWE. He does that on purpose. He's for a number of years, he's been having short-term contracts. And what he does is, you know, he'll have a contract for a certain amount of time. Just like last time, he had a contract and it was supposed to end at WrestleMania. It was going really well with him and Kevin Owens. They went against each other at Payback. And then, you know, he got written off, at the following SmackDown, I believe it was, when he lost the U.S. Championship. So, you know, that's what he does. And, you know, he's not under contract, so he doesn't have those obligations to report any and everything he does. So there's not really anything to get upset about with Chris Jericho. You know, he's just a loyal player. And, you know, at this point, it's one of those things that WWE that really doesn't have any say in the you know, ordeals with him in New Japan. He's just, like you said, he's doing his due diligence. So, Jericho is his own brand. So he has every right to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, and being the veteran that he is, and all the time that he's put in with the company and everything he's done, I doubt that there would be any hard feelings. I'm sure they'd welcome him back with open arms in a year or two if he decided to come back for a short time.
Yeah, absolutely. But there were talks that Vince was not affected at all, but Triple H may be affected about it. You know, WWE is very, very particular, very stern about, you know, their brand, you know, people being exclusive to their brand. You know, that's the reason why they change names all the time. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any type of hard feelings, but like I said, I see Jericho back in the mix sooner than later. I think this really—I mean, he's 47 years old, so I don't think he's at a point now where at 47 or about. I think his birthday is in November, so he's either 47 or about to turn 47. 47 years old. This is a perfect type of revival of his career. I mean, you know, people who are 47 are usually on the twilight of their career. so a lot of people don't even last to be 47 as far as their, you know, as far as, well, November 9th. So he'll be 47 on Thursday. So you know, a lot of people don't even last to be 47 as far as their in-ring career. So to do this at 47, he'll be, you know, 47 by the time Wrestle Kingdom come. I think it's just one of those things that Jericho has always been that person that does such a fantastic job just creating different perks about reviving his career. He's always had that type of genius mindset.
Yeah, and you know what? If this works out and it ends up being a big moneymaker, all he's doing is market research for WWE. We might see a WWE cruise in 2 years. You never know. I mean, if this thing is successful, they might team up with Jericho in the future and make it a big thing. I mean, it's worked for, I mean, I think the first time I ever heard about one of these like revival cruises was the Backstreet Boys did one several years ago. And I guess it was like a huge hit. It made a ton of money and people loved it, and they did more because people wanted it. And that we could see that with this too, because I've looked at the prices. I mean, for what you're getting, it actually seems like it's not a bad value. So I could see a lot of fans being willing to shell out money for this as opposed to a WrestleMania trip, for example, because this is going to be something completely new.
Yeah. I think market research is definitely a good terminology for that. Jericho did say that, you know, one of the reasons why Vince McMahon kind of didn't want to, well, the reason why Vince McMahon felt as if NXT wouldn't be utilized on the cruise is because he stated that he doesn't like cruises, and you know the danger of being on the boat, which they fly all the time. There's not much of a difference as far as safety is concerned. And then you have he has this phobia of his talent getting food poisoning is what Jericho said. So I don't know if that's, Vince McMahon just being super old school as far as just his anxieties is concerned, but I definitely don't think those are common issues with people. I know, nausea, can come with cruises, but I don't know about food poisoning.
I've actually read a lot of horror stories about, like, half of a cruise ship getting food poisoning, but considering how many cruises happen each year, I'm sure the percentage is less than, 1% of all cruises.
Yeah, exactly.
But I get why some people might be a little freaked out about the movement of the ship. I mean, if you're on the top rope and all of a sudden thing bucks a little bit, you never know. So, I mean, it'd be kind of like trying to have a wrestling match on a moving airplane. Turbulence comes out of nowhere.
Mother Nature is the third man of the NWO.
Exactly.
Whose side is he on?
Right.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Just as far as just any type of shaking while you're on the ropes. But yeah.
I hope they film this stuff and we get like a DVD or a webcast or something. I'd love to see. I'm sure the environment's going to be crazy. It's going to be like an NXT takeover. You're going to have only hardcore fans there, and it's going to be nuts.
Right. Yeah. I can see that. And I can definitely see them filming. I mean, at the very least, I mean, people are going to, put audio and video on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. So that's one good thing about having events is that, you get to the audience or your free photographers. So that's one good thing about social media these days. First Survivor Series trivia question of the night. Who made it to the grand finale, Survivor Series 1990? Who made it to the grand finale at Survivor Series 1990? We've got a bunch of comments here on the Facebook Live. We're streaming live through Wrestling News. I'm the associate editor there. Great site, wrestlingnews.co. Of course, we have Blog Talk Radio, where the Pancakes and Power Slam show is housed. and of course Crave Wrestling on Twitter. Follow us at Crave Wrestling for wrestling news and rumors and breaking news and any type of fun trivia that I might just drop at the bottom of at any point. And of course, follow the Crave Wrestling Facebook. And my personal account is also Chris Prolific. So anything wrestling, all things wrestling, be sure to follow and support. And we definitely appreciate your support. We got some answers here that are not the correct answer. So I'll wait. Again, the question on deck is who made it to the grand finale match at Survivor Series 1990? Flavor of the week this week is Chris and I chose a team of five for Survivor Series. It's a very interesting flavor of the week between 1987 to 1990. We chose Survivor Series 5. So be prepared. You all this live. Get your five. I'll say here as well. So the pick five between Survivor Series 1987 to 1990. Five people at this team for Survivor Series.
Sorry, Chris. I don't know if you can hear me. You're cutting out again.
Abnormal. So there was some there was some report a former WWE.
Oh, there we go.
He broke the news that Emma Lena had a lot to do with Emma's release and how Emma would just typically reject offers to her as far as just characters, ideas, and was not easy to work with. Is what the report says. So. Chris, what are your thoughts on just Emma? You know, I don't think she's going to have any issue at all with any indie work, but you know, the reports that I've actually heard myself when people used to work with her that she was not easy to work with. So, what are your thoughts on that as far as just the reported difficulty of Emma working with the creative staff, which reportedly ultimately led to her demise?
You know, it's tough to comment on that kind of stuff, not having any kind of firsthand knowledge of the situation. I mean, you always hear how if a man speaks up for himself, it's considered authoritative, but if a woman does it, it's considered, you know, nagging or annoying or something. So,
yeah.
You know, her complaints may just be her sticking up for herself and not wanting to do a bad gimmick. And a lot of wrestlers have said, you know, if you don't stick up for yourself in WWE, you're going to get saddled with something you don't like. So as far as that's concerned, Emma Lena was a horrible idea in the first place. And if she complained about it, I don't blame her. Never should have been her gimmick. It should have been Lana's. I mean, that's a Lana gimmick. That's not an Emma gimmick. Emma should have kept that badass heel that she was playing for the past few months. And, I mean, they really just did not utilize her the way she should have been. And I understand why she was frustrated.
Yeah. Well, I think the evil Emma – well, I mean, what was that the evil Emma gimmick? I think that worked out because, like, it was a really good kind of rebranding for her in NXT, and you know, because she was just kind of doing the dance thing that just kind of really got timed out. But same time, even Emma really helped her just kind of rebrand herself.
I mean, I thought the babyface gimmick was pretty bad, so as soon as she started showing attitude, I was all on board. I mean, I know she's a great wrestler, and she really embraced that gimmick. I mean, all the little details from, like, the dark lipstick to those little half gloves she was wearing, it all made her just look really, really dislikable, you know, and it just, it made it really easy to buy into that heel character, and I thought she did it well, too. So, I mean, I think this is WWE's failure, not hers.
Really?
Yeah, honestly, I do. She could have been a champion, and they let her go.
Now, do you think she would have been a champion? Do you think Eva would have been, based on what we saw, do you think that was like a quality enough character to be champion?
I mean, she's got all the talent in the world, but it all comes down to what WWE wants. I mean, I don't know how she was backstage and how any of that dealt with it, but I always thought she was decent on the mic, great in the ring. I mean, there's a few women who've won titles ahead of her that shouldn't have, so yeah. That's just my two cents. Hold on, sorry, man, you're cutting out again.
Do you think that there's anyone who she should have put the line?
Oh, I don't know, honestly. I mean, I don't know if that necessarily would have made a difference.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Like I said, you know, she'll be fine within the independents, and you know, it should all work out for her. I don't see any issues going on with her in the future as far as just getting good indie dates. I'm sure that there are people chomping at the seams at this point now. So 1990, someone asked what year. 1990, but time's up. Here's the correct answer. The grand finale was Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior, and Tito Santana against DiBiase, Martel, the Warlord, and Power and Glory. And the Babyfaces end up winning that one. What short-lived team aligned with Brutus Beefcake, Sam Houston, Jim Brazel, and the Blue Blazer to win their match at Survivor Series 1988? That's a bit of a difficult one for you. What short-lived team aligned with Brutus Beefcake, Sam Houston, Jim Brunzel, and the Blue Blazer to win their match at Survivor Series 1988? I'll give you a hint. Both of the team members are WWE. Is one of them? Wait. Yeah, WWE Hall of Famers and former world champions, two of the biggest stars in WWE history. So there's your hints. You could have received it, but I felt nice enough to give you a hint for tonight, for this particular question. The next headline, so Sawyer Fulton, former Sanity member, the original member of Sanity, with Eric Young and with Alexander Wolf and, of course, Nikki Cross. Sawyer Fulton, he was a good member of Sanity. He was a relative unknown, along with, of course, Eric Young was huge. Nikki Cross was known-ish as far as just, of course, the hardcore fans knew her, but not a lot of people knew her from her indie work. Alexander Wolf was not very known as well as far as a wide crowd is concerned. So it was a really, really good opportunity for Sawyer Fulton. Sawyer Fulton started in 2012, so he was in NXT for 4 years before landing that spot in Sanity. So it was one of those things where they appreciated his work enough to really give him a good spot, you know, for NXT. So it was a good spot, and unfortunately he got injured, so you know, and then of course Killian Dane, Big Damo, in the Indies, became Killian Dane in WWE. So you know what kind of hurt him was WWE was looking to, you know, to bring Big Damo in. Sanity was a perfect opportunity for him, and they wrote Fulton off. He recovered about and started competing again about 6 months after he got written off in house shows. He's been doing some house show work, you know, within the past 6 months. So, and then, of course, they let him go, unfortunately. So, you know, and he wrote a big, you know, he wrote a pretty poignant letter about just his appreciation. It was really, it was good. You know, one of those things that leaving on good terms type of letter. I think he's only 27 years old, so he's got a lot. You know, he's got some time left in the business. So, you know, best wishes to Sawyer Fulton, and I definitely think that, you know, him. I interviewed Marcus Louis one time, and you know, he was talking about how he was even thought about being a member of Sandy. It would be interesting to see like Sawyer Fulton and Marcus Louis, you know, team up in the independents. I know that Baron, when he was with LaFort, you know, but they were the Tribunal and Impact, and of course traveling issues kind of hurt both of them. So, you know, we'll see what happens with Sawyer Fulton. I don't know if there's. The good thing about, you know, releases nowadays in WWE is that people can certainly make their way in the independents now, because the independent scene is such a really, really hot place to be to just kind of really develop your craft. We've seen it with numerous talents, specifically people like Drew McIntyre, you know, especially Drew McIntyre. Cody's doing it now. So there's many people who have left the WWE and has really honed their craft in the indies. I can see Fulton doing that as well. He just needed a little bit more reps, a few more years, and I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it, you know, WWE is still the big leagues, but it's no longer the end-all, be-all. It's not all bingo halls and VFWs anymore, so he'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree. So WWE is reportedly doing less pay-per-views in 2018, which reportedly, hopefully, that's what we'll get. This pay-per-view every other week thing, it's just not cutting it for me. As much as I love professional wrestling, you and I get paid to watch wrestling. You know, something that we've been doing all of our lives, and we get paid to watch it and write about it, you know, so that's a dream come true. But pay-per-view every other week, just it's oversaturated. It takes away just the mystique of just pro wrestling. It doesn't give proper builds to matches. It doesn't develop characters good enough. Just like, you know, if Jinder Mahal had some time to really develop his character and the belt just wasn't thrust on him, I think that people would have bought into his character a little bit more. But just the thrust of pay-per-views, you know, two pay-per-views a month, it's oversaturated and leaves no room for suspense or mystique. So just, you know, if this report ends up being, you know, very true, I think this is a really, really good thing for the WWE. I mean, of course, we used to have the Big Four, you know, and a couple Saturday night's main events in between. Of course, with you know, the pay-per-view buys being a really big portion of the WWE revenue, you know, we had monthly pay-per-views when they kind of incorporated In Your House, and then eventually that, you know, led, you know, with this brand split, you know, it just. Too many pay-per-views at once, and I think hopefully 2018 would give us like it was at the first installment of the split. You would have a Raw pay-per-view on one month, a SmackDown pay-per-view on the next month, not a Raw and a SmackDown pay-per-view in one month. I think that's just oversaturation.
No, I totally agree. I'd be pleased if they went back to one a month, even if that meant every other month was a different brand. That would be fine with me. It would give more chance to tell stories. They'd be able to do I mean, they're already doing title matches on TV regularly these days anyway, so it's not like you have to wait until pay-per-views anymore. I mean, we just saw two tonight. You know, I mean, in the last 6 months, I think we've seen more title matches than we did all last year. So with the WWE Network being a monthly subscription service, they no longer really worry about pay-per-view buy rates, and it's a natural evolution. I mean, this is a cost-cutting measure, I'm sure, but you know, we also have four takeovers or five takeovers every year from NXT, and they've been doing one or two big tournaments a year. I mean, they need to start dialing back a little bit before people just start to walk away from the product from getting so inundated with it so much.
100% true. Absolutely. And, you know, hopefully they'll spend more time. Good job, Craig. Correct answer on that. Pedro, great remark here. Then, like, every 2 weeks, doesn't let the storylines to develop. Absolutely. You know, I think I totally agree with that. As I mentioned, it does not give the storylines to develop. So Sean asks, do you think they'll add the UK division on either show or maybe 205 Live? It's been reported that Pete Dunne, we'll talk about Raw here in just a moment. Actually, we're about to hop into talking about that here in just a bit. So, as a matter of fact, Sean, I'll save that remark as far as 205 Live for Raw and SmackDown talk in just a bit. The Mega Powers is the correct answer on that. About to hop into a short break. Before that, the next question is, who lost the WWE Championship at Survivor Series 1995? Who lost the WWE Championship in Survivor Series 1995? All right, we'll be right back with Raw and SmackDown Talk. So just the skinny notes on Raw in Manchester. We had the Miz TV with Kurt Angle. And then it developed into a match between Miz and Strowman. We had Jason Jordan defeating Elias in the Guitar and a Pole match. We had Asuka defeating Stacey Coates. They're doing the jobber deal with her now, looks like. Finn Balor defeating, it was a double count out with Finn Balor and Joe. Looks like that may develop into a feud coming up here. Braun Strowman going against The Miz, and then it leads to Kane appearing and battling Strowman. The Cruiserweight versus the Bruiserweight. Kurt Angle introduces Pete Dunne. Sheamus and Cesaro defeating Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose because of distraction by The New Day. Pedro, yes, Diesel is the correct answer. Great job. Chris, your thoughts on Raw?
I thought Raw was all right. I thought the last hour was the best. I love Pete Dunne, so seeing him on Raw was a big treat for me. And plus, it's always fun to watch somebody beat up Enzo Amore these days. But the main event, I thought it was smart the way they did that with the New Day faking an invasion and then it costing Rollins and Ambrose the title so they could potentially set up Shield versus New Day, because I think that's a trio versus trio match a lot of people didn't think we'd see because the groups didn't really overlap. So there was some interest as soon as the Shield realigned, and with them being on opposite brands, it's a perfect addition to that Survivor Series card. So I thought the last hour really played well, and I thought it did a good job pushing the pay-per-view. The other 2 hours were okay. Nothing really stands out too much to me. I mean, Strowman is always fun to watch, so it was kind of cool to see him with, you know, Miz, Axel, and Bo Dallas just kind of running over everybody.
Yeah. I think so too. Question here as far as Raw is concerned, do I think thank you. Cool backdrop with all the posters. For those who watch and have all the WrestleMania years in my studio here. Got a bunch of questions here as far as Raw is concerned. UK division, Sean, you asked, do you think that they have the UK division on either show or maybe 205 Live? So there's reports that are saying that Dunn was just kind of just to hype up the UK crowd. As far as it's concerned right now, and of course they did something on 205 Live as well, but from what I've heard, it's just a simple UK boost to bump up the division. Triple H has said in conference calls before that there's not anything set in stone as far as just really having an actual division as far as shows is concerned. That's something that, of course, is on the list of things to do, but it's not a high priority right now. I still don't understand necessarily the UK Championship as far as just defense and things. I know that they partner up with different places. Triple H actually was just in ICW. I think it was last week. He made a surprise appearance there. So the UK talent still do a ton of stuff independently. ICW, Progress. They still What Culture had I think they're called Defiant Wrestling now, and there's a lot of good UK independent promotions that WWE talent still work for as far as UK scene is concerned. So, you know, that's from what I've heard, they don't have a very high yearly salary, and they have the opportunity to work kind of with those indie UK promotions because WWE hasn't really had an exclusive style division for them. So I don't see that happening anytime soon. I can see them being featured on takeovers like they have been. And really it seems like that's the division right now. That's not really give much time for exposure. You know, they've had some NXT appearances too. Wolfgang's been on NXT, of course, Mustache Mountain defeated. They had a little mini feud with the Undisputed Era, so you know they've had some exposure on NXT. And so you know, Chris, the UK division is I don't know what grade I give it now, but it just really seems like that's really to market the UK division, allow them to have, you know, some independent dates, but not really stress the fact to actually create a division right now.
Well, I think they definitely jumped the gun a little bit with the tournament. I think they got all these great wrestlers, everything came together, and then once Tyler Bate was the champion, they didn't know what to do. So one of the things that I've liked, though, is that you do actually see that title being defended at ICW and Progress shows sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, while the division may not technically exist in WWE as a real division yet, there's still some life to it. And I could see this becoming like a once a month kind of program, you know, where they just have a once a month, 1 hour or 2 hour thing with a bunch of UK talents, whether they're those same eight guys that we've been seeing recently or not. But, you know, it's not like they have to maintain a weekly show in order to keep that title going. I mean, that title has gotten Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne so much more attention.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, there's really no downside to having it out there. So I don't really think there's a rush for them to get some weekly show going. They could easily just, like you said, you know, do a match at every takeover and occasional NXT, and then just let those guys go out and do other stuff. And they're kind of marketing for WWE just by working. So it's really, I don't think it's in a bad position. It's just one of those things that they're going to have to figure out what they want to do with it sooner rather than later.
Yeah. So another question, do you think it helped 205 having some of the wrestlers? Not really. I don't think 205. See, the thing is, I think 205 needs star power. I talked to Shane Helms a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about this here on the show about how just 205, it needs more star power. I just, you know, there's talks of Hideo Itami, which will be, I think, will be a great grab. But you know, they're afraid to bring in heavy hitters like, you know, Finn Balor, you know, because he, you know, was the Universal Champ. Now I can understand why, but if you really want that division to soar, you know, you got to bring in some heavy hitters. You know, I would acquire Rey Mysterio for 205 Live. I would prefer that, because the thing is, people like, you know, and I totally appreciate their talent so much, but people like Lince Dorado, Grand Metalik, Arya Daivari, fantastic talent. I've had him on the show. Great guy. You know, Cedric Alexander, he's one of my favorites in the 205 Live. I've had him on the show too. They've got so many good names, so many awesome people. But the thing is, with pro wrestling in general, I mean, you saw it with Sting and Flair. You've seen it with, you know, with Evolution, just the feuds that they were in. You saw it with just a lot of people. You know, you have a veteran just kind of putting the younger guy over. And that's the type of stuff that you need with 205 Live. If you're really trying to create stars instead of just a cluster of people competing every week with just storylines that aren't interesting enough to really buy into and invest in, you need some heavy hitters. And I think Rey Mysterio would be a fantastic addition to 205 Live, even if it was a GM role that kind of led to, you know, a match, you know, against Enzo or something like that at WrestleMania, or something to the nature. You know, that would be something that would really help the division out. So, next question is, who competed in the casket match at Survivor Series 1994? Who competed in the casket match Survivor Series 1994? As far as Raw is concerned, I think it was a decent show. It was good to see Pete Dunne. You know, I think the UK exposure just kind of, I mean, the crowd went bananas over him, so that's always a good thing. I don't know, you know, and I've said this before. I said this, you know, when I was talking to, you know, early on the show when I was talking to Court Bauer. I'm not a big fan of just how they're mapping out Survivor Series. Like, We'll talk about SmackDown. I think that was a huge plus, and we'll talk about that here in a moment. But just overall, I mean, it just seems like calling audibles before the show. You have these matches planned, but just, and I guess I'm making a bold prediction. I think Charlotte's going to beat Natalya next week, and it'll be Charlotte versus Alexa Bliss, which looks much better on paper, just like AJ versus Lesnar looks much better on paper. Makes it a much more intriguing pay-per-view. But right now you have The Miz and Corbin, two of the biggest heels on each respective, on their respective brands. You have Alexa and Natalya, who are also two of the biggest heels on their respective brands as far as the women's division is concerned. So it's just not a really good, it's not a really good division as far as just, I mean, it's not a really good card as far as just intrigue is concerned. So by them having matches, kind of saying the matches first and then kind of pulling audibles, it just seems poorly planned. I understand the suspense part of it, which is decent, but just to call all these audibles, you know, before the pay-per-view, it just seems a bush league to me. You know, what do you think about that?
I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with the audibles, because it's not like this kind of thing happens very often, where a card is laid out 4 weeks ago and then a few title changes happen. It's kind of a rare thing. But I agree with you that the Survivor Series card itself doesn't look all that great on paper. That being said, there's been a few pay-per-views over the past few years that didn't look great on paper that ended up being, like, better than a WrestleMania. I mean, we could end up seeing
The Shield versus New Day in like a match of the year candidate. I mean, that's possible. Those guys can all go. So, you know, and if AJ Styles is able to actually fight Lesnar for 15 minutes and put on a good match, that could be a show stealer. So,
did
I have
just say fight Lesnar for 15 minutes? Is that even possible?
I know. It seems unlikely, but but that's the thing is, I don't think they would put the title on AJ just to have him be a stepping stone for Lesnar. They could have just had Mahal do that. I think they wanted AJ because they want to get a good match out of Lesnar. Lesnar's last few matches haven't exactly been amazing. So they need something to legitimize Lesnar again as far as his talent goes. Because he hasn't been tested in a while. I mean, he gets paid a lot of money for a very few amount of dates, and he needs to start proving that he's worth it. And AJ Styles is the best guy for him to do that with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. So what was your highest point and your lowest point on Raw?
Oh, as far as the lowest point goes, it would probably be just the whole Kurt Angle riling up the roster backstage kind of thing. Like, I just thought that didn't really play well intercut with the match.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as a high point goes, I actually did enjoy the ringside part of the New Day pretending like they were going to do something. And then
nothing.
Right. I love when Woods was heading out of the arena, he said into the microphone kind of quietly, went pump fake and just walked out.
Yeah,
I don't think everybody caught that, but that was really funny. But I don't know if everybody noticed, like, Jason Jordan was booking it up those stairs to get to them. Like, they pretty much had to get out of the arena so a fight didn't happen, because otherwise Jordan was going to reach him. But it was weird. It was like the high and the low point both happened during that match for me. But I actually like that Cesaro and Sheamus got the titles, because to me, putting the titles back on them just keeps their momentum building. They're such a good team. So I'm really happy to see them back in control. And I don't know if Jey Uso was actually injured tonight. There's like, it looked like a really brutal hit, but if the Usos are healthy and they can have that match with Sheamus and Cesaro, that's going to be awesome.
It will. I just, you know, it's one of those things that I'm a traditionalist when it comes to faces versus heels. Like, babyface versus babyface, if it's built properly, I'm cool with. Like, Austin Rock 17 was a fantastic match. You know, Cena Shawn Michaels was a good match at Mania as well. You know, there's been some good Mania, you know, matches, you know, face versus face, but, you know, the build was good for it. So, got some answers, but they are not correct. So, unfortunately, I got to pull this out today. Sorry about that. Undertaker versus Mai Yokozuna was the correct answer for that. What was the main event of Survivor Series 2000? What was the main event of Survivor Series 2000? My low point for the evening for Raw was just the Kane Strowman thing. I think it just kind of was dull for them to build Kane and Strowman, and then for Kane to come out and to fight Strowman. I think you save stuff like that for kind of like go home shows as far as physicality. Wasn't a big fan of that. High point, I'm going to go, I think Finn Balor versus Samoa Joe was a really good match. So I think it led to a double count out, which I think is a great idea. It protects both of them, and it sets up for a future match, which is good. I think that was a good call. All right, your thoughts on SmackDown Live?
I actually really like this week's SmackDown. I thought every segment moved well, and there wasn't a whole lot of wasted time. I thought it was a solid 2 hours.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it was solid too. I liked the fact that they're They kind of pushed the New Day, you know, with the whole Kofi Kingston and Steven says Lesnar in the Fatal 4-Way not that long ago was amazing. His best match of the current Fatal 4 with SummerSlam. No, I think Lesnar's best match was probably the Triple Threat at Royal Rumble with Seth Rollins and Cena. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I just think it's funny that the two matches that were just mentioned involved multiple other opponents who could put on
right.
good work while Lesnar was recovering from something.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, I think in that Fatal 4-Way, Lesnar got put through a table and he was down for a solid 5 minutes.
He was out. Yeah, he left and came back. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, I mean, not exactly the the best endorsement of his skills. He hasn't had the best singles match in a while. But I'm sorry, what was your question before that?
What do you think his best – I mean, he's been there 5.5 years now. So what do you think his best match has been so far?
You know, this is going to have a little bias to it, but I was there at Extreme Rules in Chicago for his first match back against Cena.
Okay.
And that nice. I actually thought was an entertaining match, especially live, because there was so much hype to it. So I gotta go that first match back against Cena.
I can see that. I wasn't a big fan of that at all. Okay, so Yokozuna was said. I'm getting corrected here on the live stream, so I'll give you this. Good job. For Yokozuna. Triple H versus Stone Cold is the correct answer as well. Great job. All right, great job with these questions here. Who was the sole survivor of the 2004 Survivor Series main event match? How about that one? I say Cena and Rollins. Royal Rumble was good. I think, you know, a lot of people know how I feel about CM Punk. I wrote a very controversial piece on the Bleach Report some years ago that got like 300 comments on it. And it was very, very controversial piece. But I think probably the best singles match was him and Punk at SummerSlam. I think it was a decent. It was pretty good. I think it brought out Lesnar's offense a lot more, which was good. So his matches with Taker were meh because they both Taker. You know, of course, was like at his final countdown. And Lesnar just really didn't help Taker as far as that's concerned. Yes, SmackDown Live I think was solid. I think Kofi Kingston and Sami Zayn was good. Orton and Rusev. We had a question as far as where do you think they'll push Rusev? I like this Rusev Day thing. This is funny. I think perhaps there's been talks of him possibly becoming a babyface soon. I think people want to like Rusev. I think sometimes when you have competitors where people want to like them and kind of hurt them as heels. That's basically essentially why AJ turned again, because he just kept getting AJ Styles chance, and that hurts him as a heel. Good heels, I mean, you're not supposed to get cheered.
Right.
So I think, you know, if they do that with Rusev, I think that would help his character. I think if they turn Rusev and Wyatt both on Raw and SmackDown, I think that would help their characters immensely because fans want to cheer them both. So we'll see how that goes. And then Rusev has an easy feud. He can feud with Aiden English. Aiden English can do something that kind of cost him, a match or something like that, and turn on him. After being yelled at or something like that, and they'll easily kind of help him as far as his baby face and feud with Aiden English. So, I mean, that'll be an easy feud going into, whenever they decide to turn him. Gable and Benjamin, as far as the count out with the Usos, it's kind of odd because it seems like they're protecting Gable and Benjamin for a potential feud, a potential title run, which I like the team. I think they're a very solid team. So Lynch and Ellsworth actually went a lot better than I expected. So
yeah, yes, it did.
Yeah, the intergender thing, you know, that's been so taboo with WWE for a number of years. But I think they booked it very well. I think it didn't look like anything over the top. I mean, a lot of people criticize Lucha Underground for for that. I just recently saw a match with Taya Valkyrie. I think she just went by Taya and Lucha, but she got suplexed by Brian Cage. Brian Cage was standing on the second rope outside. Taya Valkyrie was inside, and she got suplexed all the way over the rope into a table. So it was like, that's the Lucha life. Of course, sexy star, Taya Valkyrie. Oh, goodness, what's her name? Used to be in WWE. Really, really good. Her name slipped me. I don't remember her name, but she was in the WWE for a little bit. She was in NXT.
Thinking of Eva Lees, are you?
Eva Lees, yes. That's exactly who I was thinking of. Eva Lees, yeah. She's in there as well. She's fantastic. So, I mean, there's some good names there.
What is your opinion on intergender wrestling, though? Do you think it's progressive to show that a woman can fight a man, or do you think it's always negative to show any violence from a man to a woman?
Now, here's
that's the big debate.
Yeah, it is. I think if there is a rhyme to the reason, I can see it. Like Ellsworth and Becky Lynch made perfect sense to me. And it was a very safe match, and it made sense from a storyline perspective. Becky Lynch is feuding with Carmella. Carmella sicked, her dog, so to speak, on Becky. That's what the role he's playing nowadays. It was a very safe match. Becky Lynch got pushed a couple times, and Iris whipped most of the time. So that was fine. But, when you get to the goriness, when you get to just the hardcore Lucha style, I like Lucha Underground. I'm good friends with Marty Elias. I speak so many positive things because, I'm good friends with Marty, and I speak very highly of the company. But, I could pass on the hardcore intergender matches. Because I think when you have like sexy star going against like Mel Mortez, who's Ricky Banderas is just a freak, a machine, And so like when you have something like that, it gets cringeworthy at times, when someone goes through a table going against, someone who's, double their size. The point is to show the athleticism and that, the woman can hang. I don't think there's really nothing to prove there. It doesn't matter. Like to me, there's nothing to prove, if you're trying to prove that a woman can hang with a man in an intergender match, who cares? Why was that an issue? To me, there was never an issue to begin with to even prove. So that's really kind of my thoughts on it. I think if there's a rhyme to the reason, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
What about you?
Oh, I agree with you completely. I think it all depends on the opponents and the storyline. I mean, nobody wants to watch Brock Lesnar versus Alexa Bliss because that would just be horrifying.
Yeah.
But yeah. James Ellsworth versus Becky Lynch, Becky Lynch is almost his size. Like she's
right.
Got strength. She's his height. It makes a lot of sense. I think Lucha Underground gets away with it for one, because they have a lot of smaller male talents who won't overpower the women like visually. But at the same time,
I do think it's one of those things that more female fans care about than male fans, because they think with Ronda Rousey making such an impact and women athletes having so much success over the past couple of decades, that it would be more progressive to show more intergender matches. But I don't know if there's necessarily as big a market for it in WWE as there might be for a Lucha Underground or the Indies.
True.
Like Candice LeRae, you know, she fights guys all the time, and it's entertaining. And she's, you know, a small girl, but she makes it look good. I don't know if that would translate the same on WWE television.
I don't think so, because it's still, I mean, no matter how far, how quote-unquote progressive you get, WWE is still that character-based, you know, television. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can get as indie, you can try to get as indie as possible, but that type of crowd, you know, they're looking for characters first, and you know, that's what it's all about. Indie, you can get away with it when you have that type of indie feel. You know, there's a lot of people. You know, Brandi Rhodes went against Joey Ryan. You know what I mean? In the indies. You know, and that's you know, the whole Plex type of, you know, deal that he's doing. A lot of women, you know, he's went against women before, and they've caught, you know, the Plex, you know, and you know,
he's the Andy Kaufman of the 21st century.
He is, indeed, he is. Yeah. So you know, that's there's, you know, there's, you know, there's giggles with that. You know, there's, it's you know, a gimmick. You know, I mean, I can understand that, but that, of course, that wouldn't fly. Not one bit, you know, in the WWE, you know, atmosphere. So,
not in the PG era.
No, not at all. Not even a little bit. That would, Vince McMahon would get a call probably immediately after it happens from one of the shareholders, saying, "I'm pulling out of here." Not
exactly.
Pulling out of here, so I'm out of here. So. I gotta please the stockholders, so I totally understand. So. All right, so what do you got? High and low of SmackDown Live.
Well, I was thinking about this for a few minutes, and I would have normally said AJ Styles winning the title would be the high, but I gotta actually go with Becky Lynch getting the win, because I was sure WWE was gonna have Carmella have help Ellsworth cheat just to get them more heat. And the fact that they didn't, and actually gave Becky that nice moment of finally being able to rip his arm out of its socket and all that, like, and I'm such a big Becky Lynch mark anyway, so that's gotta be my high point. And as far as the low point goes, the shortness of the tag title match was obviously a low point, but I don't know. Like, I actually thought Jay might have been injured, because that shot he took from Gable looked so brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he caved right in right after that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it did look, you know, if it's a work, it was a really good sell, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. As far as my my low point, I would say Orton versus Rusev. I'm so tired of that match. I just really am. Orton is notorious for, unfortunately, Orton is notorious for me to say I'm tired of him going against, you know, person B. You know, early in the year was Jinder Mahal, you know, and now it's Rusev. You know, so the high point, of course, was AJ winning the championship. AJ versus Brock Lesnar to me is just so much better on paper, so much better. Makes Survivor Series so much more intriguing. Speaking of Survivor Series, good job, Steven. The correct answer is Randy Orton. So good job on that. Next question is, what was the main event for Survivor Series 2011? So as you all think about that, we're going to get to the flavor of the week, and we'll be right back.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right, so let's gets our top five. Well, I'll let you go first, Chris, with so your Mega Survivor Series team, everybody who the options are anyone who competed between 1987 and 1990. So out of those 4 years of Survivor Series, who is your mega team of five?
I got to be honest, this was hard than I thought it would be. So let me ask you this. Do you want the team I would have picked when I was actually watching during those years, or the team I would pick now, having known more about wrestling and appreciating different wrestlers for different things?
We got about 6 minutes. You can choose both.
All right, so had I been picking actually back then, it would have been Savage, Hogan, Warrior, and the Legion of Doom.
Hmm. Good choice.
But looking back now, it would have been Savage, the Rockers, and the Hart Foundation.
Hmm. So why the smaller squad?
Well, as I've gotten older, I've grown more fond of tag team wrestling. And those are my two favorite tag teams of all time. So putting them together with Savage just makes sense. I mean, Savage is just, he's going to be on both teams, you know. There's no getting rid of him. But it came down to, like, you know, the powerhouse players of the time versus the guys I look back and actually think were the best wrestlers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. It's a good point. All right, so number five on my list is no—it's no rhyme or reason, no random order, no five to one. Number five on my list goes to the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Ooh, yeah, just one of the biggest names between 87 and 90. Just the man when it came to just late 80s wrestling, as far as WWE is concerned. So he'll be he's one of the people there. The second person on the team is the Ultimate Warrior. Just that type of powerhouse feel, super hyped feel with the Ultimate Warrior. Definitely a pick. Number three is Andre the Giant. I mean, he was the winner. He pinned Bam Bam Bigelow in 1987 to win the first Survivor Series. So why not have the eighth wonder of the world on the Survivor Series team? Plus, you know, he's 7'4". What was he built? He was built what, 7'4", 525 for most of his career. I think that was his.
That sounds about right.
Name. Yeah, 7'4", 525. You know, who would not want a 7'4", 525-pound monster on their Survivor Series team? And my fourth pick is The Undertaker, debuted in 1990. He was not a part of... he was eliminated, unfortunately, on his debut match. But, I mean, he didn't get pinned. I think it was... Count out, was it that he got eliminated, or DQ? I don't remember exactly what he got.
I can't remember. It might have been disqualification.
Yeah, it might have been. But, you know, it was interesting that he lost his first match. He particularly lost his first match. But yeah, I mean, he's the Undertaker. He's one of the greatest of all time, so I definitely want him on my squad. And of course, number five is the immortal Hulk Hogan. Just one of the biggest names in Survivor Series history for the first 5 years of it. And Hulk Hogan's Hulk Hogan. I mean, there's really nothing you can say about that. So I would definitely, that would be my squad. Hogan, Andre, Warrior, Savage, Taker. I got a bunch of compliments here. Thank you so much for all your wonderful, as always, wonderful interaction here. Pedro said I don't have more battery and I don't have electricity, but I enjoyed this podcast. Greetings from Puerto Rico. So definitely my prayers are with you, Pedro, and Puerto Rico. Thank you so much for taking your time, not having electricity, battery dying, and spending the last hour and a half, just enjoying this podcast. So that means a lot to us. Chris, let everybody know where we can find you on social media.
BR_doctor on Twitter and always on Bleacher Report.
Sounds good. Always doing some stuff on Bleacher Report, so please follow his work. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Chris, again, as always, man. Fantastic. Fun time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, dude. It was a good time.
Absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being a part of the show. This is episode 293. Thank you so much, Court Bauer, for being on the show tonight, talking some Survivor Series. And thank you so much for the Wrestling News Facebook fan page, Facebook Live. Thank you so much for the Crave Wrestling Facebook fan page, going Facebook Live. And also, of course, follow us at Crave Wrestling. Join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. Pancakes and Power Slam shirts available. Message the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. Message the Crave Wrestling Facebook fan page for any type of questions that you have, and I'll be more than happy to answer them. For Chris Mueller, the doctor, our featured guest co-host for the night, I am Chris Featherstone. Ladies and gentlemen, this is 293 episode of the Pancakes and Power Slam show. Hope you all had a great time. I sure did. Until next week, you all enjoy your week of wrestling, and God bless, and thanks for joining us. Goodbye.